After the United States invaded Afghanistan and Iraq following the 9/11 attacks, our military began using a new device that would change the way we fight wars forever: armed drones. In the 16 years since, hundreds of drones, otherwise known as unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, have been deployed to serve both for surveillance and as weapons, and many of these missions have been carried out behind a curtain of secrecy. Brett Vilakovich and Christopher Stewart's new book, Drone Warrior, An Elite Soldier's Inside Account of the Hunt for America's Most Dangerous Enemies, takes us behind that curtain. Mr. Vilakovich is a former Delta intelligence analyst with more than 10 years' experience in counterterrorism, and Mr. Stewart is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist. Their book is published by Day Street Books, and I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show. Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Christopher,
thanks for having us.
Were you at all concerned about talking so openly about missions that were otherwise highly classified?
Well, I was interested in those classified missions, but Brett, of course, was very careful about what he told me. It was a constant conversation about, what he could talk about, and this, he towed the line pretty hard.
And what about vetting? Did you have the book vetted?
The vetting process was the most intense vetting process I've ever gone through. In fact, I think it took about 8 months.
Yeah, what was supposed to be just a 90-day review ended up turning into, I think, 22 months of getting vetted. And that was because everyone around me knew the importance of ensuring that our nation's warfighters weren't compromised here.
Well, some of the things you say about tell stories that have nothing to do with the drones are shocking here. For example, the military training you underwent. You describe instances where you were tortured and brainwashed. Is that really possible?
Right. I mean, it was in a way that was there to teach us how to get in the minds of the terrorists that we were going after. So what we're talking about really is SEER school. We're also talking in the book very clearly about how I was trained to act like a terrorist, to operate like one. And we would go through this training scenario so that I could figure out a way to target them better. And that was the whole idea, was to get into their mindset so I could figure out how to pinpoint them to a specific place on the map.
When you enter the military, how do you wind up in this area rather than another area?
Well, a lot of people go through different paths to get to this. I think generally as people start rising through the ranks, individuals get pulled out. And so the organizations that I worked for were some of the most elite organizations in the military's arsenal. And every single person in these organizations are the best of the best. They're some of the brightest minds in the business of war. And, people start to see how you operate. And I did a ton of a different combat deployments and operated in the field as an intelligence analyst. And so people got used to me doing good.
And what's interesting actually about Brett's journey to where he ended up was that he had to make a bunch of choices along the way. That, in fact, the CIA at one point came in, and he trained with the CIA and went to a school with the CIA, and but decided ultimately that he didn't want to be a spy.
But what was your job here? So were you remotely piloting drones?
No, and I want to make that clear. So I'm not the guy that's pulling the trigger on the gun that's shooting the terrorist in the head. I'm not the drone pilot or operator that's launching the missiles. I'm the guy that is specifically using drone technology to find targets. So then I can say, there's that target. You go shoot them in the head now.
And so you had to be in Iraq because some of the drones are controlled from bases in the United States.
Right. Well, that's the difference here. And that's why this book, when you read it, it's such a different side of the story. It's a side of the story that no one has ever told before, because we're in the fight. We don't get to, shut our doors at 5 p.m. and go back home to our family. We are there 24/7 working this mission in the field, and we need to be as mobile as the enemy is. And so we had to operate outside in the field with them.
And he's also talking. So you're referring to the pilots themselves that are based in Nevada, among other places. Brett is talking to those pilots and telling them where to take the drone, what to look at, how fast to go, how high to be.
Are there frustrations in a job like this?
Of course. I mean, you're dealing with a lot of moving pieces. I mean, we were essentially detectives at this doctorate level, right? But we don't have to worry about warrants. But at the same time, we're also dealing with these variety of different factors, from things at the strategic level to politics back in Washington. And my job was not to worry about that. It was to find these leaders in these different terrorist groups. And so you can get frustrated by what you're seeing taking place back home when all you want to do is go after America's enemies.
Christopher, the ethics of using drones in war has been controversial. Did you intend this book to serve as a defense of the use of militarized drones?
No, not at all. I actually came in to the book skeptical, like a lot of people, of drones, and hearing about all the collateral damage drones.
Which we will deal with in a moment.
Right. I got to say, one of the surprises that I found in our many, many conversations along the way was that many of his missions they ended up killing people. They ended up actually capturing men, which is not sort of the conventional wisdom out there.
Yeah, I think there's this thought process that people out behind the drone program are sitting there just killing indiscriminately and at random. And the truth is that drones are actually primarily used to capture terrorists, and that's because terrorists are worth more to us alive than they are dead.
So these are the surveillance drones that spot cars driving or trucks driving down a road, and you then say to some troops in the area, this looks suspicious.
It's not just surveillance. I mean, you tell them about your drones. They're equipped with Hellfire missiles.
Yeah,
they're capable of doing both surveillance and
striking.
But we were talking about capturing these people. Obviously, the Hellfire missiles,
right,
aren't going to capture
anybody.
It's
a choice that he makes along the way.
Right. I mean, there's a decision making process in. You know, I might have two Predator drones following one target for a month or two, watching what he does, watching what he eats, you know, the things that he does, and watching him kind of plan these attacks, while I might have a separate one at the same time getting ready to go after somebody that's about to conduct a bombing attack on a U.S. soldier's base, and we need to go get them right then, right there. And so
you saw them loading the truck with the ammunition.
Look, think about what drones can do. Never before, we've been killing bad guys and fighting wars since the beginning of time, but never before have we had the ability to know so much about a person, and that's what drones give us the ability to do. So we're seeing a lot of things that people don't want us to see. We're watching the things that they don't want us to watch.
And yet thousands of innocent people have died in drone strikes. How do you feel when you hear that a drone strike has killed innocent people, especially women and children?
I mean, these are the things that keep us up at night, absolutely. But I know that the people behind these operations, we're not sitting there, you know, trying to, in a lot of cases, we let people go that were able to live to see another day because they had women and children around them. And what most people don't realize is the precision involved and how these things keep us up at night when a mistake happens. All right, we know that the women and children didn't sign up to be a part of this evil that exists out there. And so we are going after individuals. And so I never really saw many mistakes like that happen because we were so precise in what we did.
Is it different if the wrong people were targeted or innocent people were collateral damage during a successful strike?
No, I mean, there is no acceptable level of casualties that are from innocent people. I mean, hands down. But that's not what we're doing, though. We're picking apart the structure of groups like ISIS. We are taking down the top leaders. And let me make it clear. We're not talking about somebody who, you know, stole a pack of cigarettes at a grocery store. We are talking about people that
only happens in Ferguson, in places like that.
Well, I mean, we're talking about people that have spent their lives killing innocent people, tens of thousands of people. The week before, they might have driven a car bomb into a market and exploded it, killing hundreds of people. We're saving lives. We're not, you know, we're preserving them. We're not taking them. And that is the best case scenario.
And also the rules of engagement have changed significantly since the time that Brett, when he first entered and when he left, their engagement rules they've really cracked down on, you know, the level of decision making.
Right.
And who makes those rules?
It depends on the area of operations. But most of the places that I was operating at was designated combat zones. We were given the mission, break apart these groups like Al-Qaeda in Iraq, the Islamic State. And we already had this overarching authority to do what was necessary to get the job done. But there are other chains of command that take place, for different locations. But one thing that the Obama administration started to do was tighten up the rules to ensure that there was less and less of a chance that a civilian could be hurt in the process or that Americans might be killed in the process. And that was important because it made us get even better and more precise of what we did. And I was trained by and surrounded by some of the best minds that knew how to do this day after day.
But since you've left, we've had a new administration, which I gather is killing at least one person a day through drone strikes. Have the rules been loosened again?
I don't think so. I think it's too early for the rules to be loosened. I do see reports now about how they're trying to take away some of the decision-making process from more of the top level and let the guys in the field do what they do best. I think when you give U.S. soldiers and U.S. troops the tools that they need to do their job, they're going to do it with precision and proficiency and with the American people in mind.
My guests are Brett Velikovich, who is a former Delta Intelligence analyst. He did it for more than 10 years. And Christopher Stewart, a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist. They have collaborated on a book called Drone Warrior, an elite soldier's inside account of the hunt for America's most dangerous enemies. We have done a number of segments in the past about drones, including one with a drone operator. And she said that after she stopped doing it, she came down with PTSD because of the stress and the guilt that she felt in some cases. Is PTSD a problem here?
I'm sure it is. It wasn't something that I necessarily had a problem with. I mean, people go through some traumatic experiences, and some folks are more traumatic than others. I mean, I was not the guy running, kicking down the door, I wasn't the Green Beret Navy SEAL guy getting shot at that's having to see these things. I'm sitting behind the computer and I'm making decisions from that level. But at the same time, you know, the burden that I have, the mental toll that we talk about in this book that you'll see is not from this, you know, I'm crying myself to sleep because, oh my God, we did all these bad things. The mental toll that I had to deal with was more of this weight of the world on your shoulders, knowing that I'm the guy that has the ability to do something about this. And I'm the guy that has this almost godlike power to actually go after America's enemies. And there's not many people that have the ability to do that.
In fact, there was a feature film recently with Helen Mirren, in which she's in the role that you were in, and where she kept on holding off on having the drone strike because there was a child in the area, and finally decided to have the missile strike, and the kid dies.
Right. Well, it goes back to this decision-making process. Again, it also goes back to these people we're going after. They're not little gray helmets in a trench that are 100 yards away that are running after us, and you just know that they're going to, if you don't shoot them first, they're going to kill you. These are, we never before in the history of the world have we had this ability to know so much information on these guys, and yet we still decide to either capture or kill them. And as a young guy doing this like I was, that's pretty heavy. That's heavy to have that type of burden, you know, on you mentally, to know that you're potentially signing this guy's death warrant by putting him on your list for people to go after.
Haven't you remained in the drone industry since you left the military?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think one of the things that really resonated with the people that are doing the movie, developing the movie around this book, is the fact that I didn't just stop with
Michael
military.
Michael Bay?
You know, I didn't just stop with the military side of the things. So what I do now is I dedicate my life to sharing drone technology with the world and educating others on how you can use it for things like anti-poaching operations, humanitarian operations. And so I spend my time essentially traveling the world and donating drones and teaching people how to use them to help solve some of the world's most complex problems.
Companies like Amazon want to include drones in their business models, but right now they're not allowed to? The laws don't allow that?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that the consumer drone industry is way ahead of regulation, and it'll always be the case. I mean, think about just in the last 8 months, over 800,000 consumer drones are registered with the FAA, and that's compared to 350,000 fixed-wing aircraft that have been registered over the last 100 years. So if people don't think that we're going to have a drone per household very, very soon, they better get with it.
There are people who have drones, and sometimes they've gotten too close to commercial airplanes. So,
and the even darker side of that is when ISIS gets their hands on drones and starts using drones.
And they already are. Yeah, they because people don't realize how capable
they are. Because the United States isn't the only country manufacturing drones.
Right. I mean, the Chinese own something like over 50% of the U.S. drone market. I mean, the consumer drone market. I mean, that's kind of scary to think about. Essentially, but ISIS knows that you can now take these very cheap drones and weaponize them, and to me, that's one of the scariest things.
Christopher, will you and Brett be involved in the film, the Michael Bay film?
I'm not as much involved in the film. Brett, I think Brett's, you've been
yeah, I mean, they're developing, and then these guys are doing what they do best. I will tell you, the one thing I'm limited on
what...
Who do
you want to play you?
Well, I'm limited on what I can say about it, but the one thing I will tell you is that, you know, Michael Bay, one thing folks don't know about him is how much he loves wildlife conservation and how much he cares about animals. And I think that's one of the things that probably resonates with these guys is the fact that we're using this technology for good now. And that's what, to me, if the film gets made, that it should encompass is out how this tech can be used to save lives and not take it.
And it's going to remain controversial. Do you hope that this will resolve some of the doubts in some people's minds?
I hope so. I mean, that was the point of writing the book. Look, I wrote this book because I feel like there's this media bias to, you know, drones indiscriminately killing. And the truth is the people behind these programs, they care so much about saving lives. And there's this bias that there's not this method to this, how this works. And it's just not the truth from guys on the inside. And so I'm telling it from people that know, that see this every day, that have stared and watched these bad guys and seen how evil they are.
Some people are concerned because it makes killing impersonal.
I think it's so far from that. It's not the truth. Again, if I'm looking at a person from three different angles with three different drones, think about how much I know about that guy. Think about that. When I fall asleep at night, I'm watching that live drone feed circling the target as he's sleeping, and I'm waking up to him, you know, driving outside
his school,
taking his kids to school. And the guys in my position that were doing this, you know, I would come back 50 to 60 pounds lighter. People wouldn't recognize me. I'd be ghostly white.
They called him Casper.
You know, they called me Casper. And that's because of the stress. And some of the guys I work with, they had beds built next to their computers because they didn't want to worry about walking to their room and miss a thing. And that's how important the work is.
Brett Velikovich and Christopher Stewart will be speaking at the Intrepid Sea, Air, and Space Museum tonight at 7:30. If you would like to see them, buy tickets. You can find a link on our show page at WNYC.org. The book is called Drone Warrior, an elite soldier's inside account of the hunt for America's most dangerous enemies. It is published by Day Street. And I thank both of you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you so much.